Hey, welcome to the Fundraising Freedom Podcast with Mary Valone. I'm your host, Mary Valone, and this is the place where aspiring six and seven figure fundraisers come to be encouraged, empowered, and educated on how to raise more funds and have more freedom. We are in episode 106, and today we're talking about the four things you shouldn't be afraid to say. And there are a lot of things that I feel like we're afraid of saying, but these are the four that I think really dig deep into the kind of work that we do. And so let's jump right in and I'll share these four and then we'll just unpack them. Okay. So the first one is the fact that we sometimes have a hard time saying that we don't know. We don't know the answer. I don't know. Okay. Number two, I made a mistake. Number three, I need help. And number four, I'm sorry. So number one, I don't know. I don't know the answer. And this is really, really difficult depending on where you are in the organizational chart. So the higher you are up in that organizational chart, the more likely you're going to feel like if somebody else doesn't know the answer, that you need to know the answer, especially if you're considered an expert in your field. If you are running a nonprofit where you guys are the leaders in that particular field, it's easy for people to pick up the phone or the media or anyone to reach out to you and say, hey, we want to interview you for this because you're the expert. And they're going to ask you all these deep questions about things that probably you should know the answers to, but maybe you don't because maybe the information is just not even available. And so we have to be able to just say, you know what, I'm not sure what the answer is to that, or I don't know, but let me look into it. Let me see if I can't find the answer for you. But especially, I mean, I think that if you're considered an expert, and I know sometimes, I mean, I feel this quite a bit because I feel like, oh, I'm supposed to be the fundraising expert. But there is so many things that are changing all the time. Technology's changing. You know, I'm always trying new things and testing out different things to see if they work or they don't work. And sometimes they work for a season and then sometimes they don't anymore. And so we have to be able to say, like, I don't know if this works, but here, these people have tried it and it seemed to work for them. And I feel like if, you know, if you ever watch the TV show Dr. Oz, I mean, I used to watch him all the time, but then I got a little frustrated because I felt like they were giving all this expert advice about health and fitness and what you should eat and what you shouldn't eat and what's going to cause cancer and what's not. And eventually, after a few years of watching it, I started to realize that they kept on coming back to the same things and saying, oh, yeah, remember when we said that this was bad for you? Oh, now it's okay for you. Or remember when we said it was good for you? Well, now it's not so good for you anymore. Studies show that now it's not good. And it's like, this is the way that it is in every single industry. You know, there's been studies that have shown that 50% of what we know today will be debunked in the next couple years, which is crazy. So, I mean, things just change all the time. So I just want you to know, and I want to give you permission to just be able to say, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, you know? And so with all of us, I mean, we don't have to be the expert in everything. We don't have to know all the answers. And I don't think people really expect that of us, but it is hard to say. It's hard to let people know, especially, like I said, if you're in leadership, and people are looking to you to be the guide and you to be the one that's leading everything forward, for you to say that you don't know, it does give other people permission for them to say that they don't know when you ask them a question. So I feel like it just gives you a space where people can feel a little bit more comfortable and they can feel like, you know what, we don't all have to have the answers. We're all working towards them and we're all trying to make the best decisions with the information that we know, right? Okay, so that's number one, that you shouldn't be afraid to say, I don't know. Number two, I don't want you to be afraid of saying, I made a mistake. And there are lots of studies that talk about how our brains, you know, they're fighting us. We want to be right. You know, we don't want to have made a mistake or that we would be moving in a direction that isn't right, isn't positive. And so there's actually a lot of people talk about this term cognitive dissonance. And cognitive dissonance just means it's inconsistent thoughts and beliefs. And we don't want that. We don't want to be feeling like there's two things that are competing for the same thing. So when we, like, that's why it's hard for us to admit that we made a mistake about something because, you know, in our mind, we start to rationalize why it was okay. Think about people who are overweight or somebody who's smoking. You know, there's no reason why we know being overweight is not okay. We know that cigarette smoking and whatever is bad. So, but our minds work in a way where we convince ourselves, like say for instance, somebody who smokes, they may say to themselves, yeah, but smoking helps me, you know, to not eat as much because my hands are busy. Well, and you know, obesity and, you know, being overweight, well, that's bad too. So then all of a sudden there's this rationalization that's happening to say, yeah, it's okay. Like it's fine. And you just make do with it, you know? And I think we do that with our health too, all the time, you know, where it's like, oh, I'm tired. I worked hard. I deserve this. I deserve that. But when it comes to telling somebody, you know, that you made a mistake, the number one person that is hard to say that you made a mistake to is yourself. You know, that you screwed up. Look at long-term relationships and people who are like in a bad relationship. It's so hard to tell yourself, you know what, I made a mistake and I chose the wrong person, or I made a mistake and I chose the wrong job or the wrong, you know, thing to do with my time. I should have been spending my time somewhere else and I made a mistake. Or just in general, when it comes to our fundraising, that somewhere along the line we screwed up. And we have to be able to admit it. And sometimes we have to defend the mistakes of all of our volunteers or the people that are within our organization, that somehow we have to, you know, be the person who vocally says that, you know, we screwed up, that we made a mistake, that somewhere our organization, somebody within our organization made a mistake. And like I said, it's like, you know, battling this, that we don't want to do something wrong. You know, who wants to admit that they screwed up? Nobody. You know, I've shared a story with you guys in the past where I had a donor who had paid for a sponsorship. And one of the parts of that sponsorship was that we were going to put their sign up on the main stage. And I don't know who, like, I mean, it really wasn't anybody's fault necessarily, but we all should have been having our eyes on that. And we all should have realized that this sign did not get up, but the skirting was being put up on the stage and the sign was sitting on the floor waiting for the skirting for the stage. And somehow the sign got slid right underneath the grand stage and it never got put up. So the sign was there. It was sitting right underneath the stage. And we come to find out that it never got put up. A few days later, we found out that the sponsor was really upset. And we even like dug back into the pictures to see whether or not that sign was there. Because really, I didn't even realize that it hadn't even gone up. And so, I mean, in the end, I had to be the one to go and have this conversation with the sponsor to tell him, we made a mistake. You know, like, we are so sorry that didn't get, you know, it didn't get put up. You know, the fact that we thought everything was lined out appropriately and then here it was at the event and it didn't even get up on the stage. And so we made a mistake, you know, we messed up. We screwed that one up royally, you know? And so I had to, you know, take that one for the team. And, you know, he ended up pulling his support and didn't end up sponsoring at that same level the next year. And that was, you know, that was on us. That was on me. So those are the sorts of things that it's like, we have to be able to tell somebody that we messed up, you know, whether it was our thing or whether it was somebody within the organization, we have to be able to say that verbally because that person expected that. He expected an acknowledgement that we screwed it up, you know, that it did not go the way that we had planned. And we had committed that we were going to be there for them and that we were going to do this on their behalf. And we didn't. So that was our mistake, you know? And so the third one then, so after the, I don't know, I made a mistake. And then the third one is I need help. Oh, I need help. Okay. So this is the, I think that this one should just be like on the Rolodex for our nonprofits, you know, because we're always asking for help. We're in a position where we have got to ask for help on every little detail of the work that we do because we want to save and we want to make sure that as many dollars as possible goes right to the mission and goes right to our cause. So in order to do that, we have to empower a lot of volunteers, a lot of people to step up and serve in different avenues of our cause in order to make sure that more dollars go in the bank. Okay, so asking for help. I don't know where this came from, but I think it's because I'm the youngest of seven. But I have always like been pretty bold about asking for help. I've never felt bad about asking. And I just back to the fact that I don't know, number one, if you don't know, you need to go ask for help. So if you don't know the answer, you've got to find help somewhere. So we should just know that asking for help is just a part of being a human. Okay. We all need help. We all need each other. We need resources. We need information. So asking for help is just a part of life. And, you know, so here's the thing. Asking for help makes us feel helpless. And I know that that's hard. And so sometimes it's like it brings up different emotions in our lives that are not great. You know, we don't want to feel like we're weak or that, you know, maybe somebody's rejecting us if they say no when we ask them for help. So all sorts of different things come into play here, and you just don't feel like you're in a ton of control. And so when you can flip this around a little bit, you start to remember that back when I was talking about the six, you know, most important things when it comes to persuasion, one of them is reciprocity. And reciprocity can go one of two ways. You know, really, you can feel like, hey, if I help somebody else, then they'll feel obligated to help us. So that's really what the term reciprocity means. But if I ask for help from somebody else, now all of a sudden I feel this sense of obligation to help them when they need it. And when it comes to charity work and nonprofit work that we do, the win-win, I always say this, the relationship has to be a win-win. So if I ask for help from you, you have to feel really good about it and help us, which in turn is the reciprocity. That is what you get in exchange, is that you feel good about it. And this is why so many of us volunteer our time, so many of us give to charity, is because in the end, it feels good. And that feel-good feeling that we get in return is the reciprocity. So when you ask somebody to help you and to volunteer, don't feel like you have to then do them a favor later on, because the joy of being a part of your cause is what they get in return. So when you ask for them to give something to you, you want to be able to give something in return, you know, back to them. And sometimes they want that feel good. Sometimes they want recognition. Sometimes they want their name to be seen as being part of the community. I just went out to dinner last night with my husband, and we went to a barbecue place. It's one of my favorite barbecue places in St. Louis, Pappy's. If you've ever been, it's amazing. But as we were walking through, they make you, you know, wait in line. They're the line like wrapped around because it was, you know, a Saturday night. And so when we were in line, I was just looking at all of the plaques that were up on the wall of all the different charity events that this business had been a part of. And, you know, they probably did those charity events because it was the right thing to do, but it was so great that they got the ability to actually display something in their business to recognize what they had done for those causes. And it showed the community, it showed me just walking through that these guys are really good guys, that they care about helping others in need, that they want to be a part of the community. They care about, you know, our community just in general. And so sometimes that is what they want in exchange. So I think the whole thing is that when you ask for help, do not feel like you're somehow weak or that there's something deficient in what you're doing. In exchange, it really is all about that we need each other. You know, we all want to be a part of something bigger than ourselves. And so by asking for help, people get a chance to be a part of that thing that you're doing. So, but we need it. We need our family. We need our friends. We need the people that are surrounding us, because we can't do it alone. And if you think you can, you're fooling yourself. Because no, I mean, there has been nothing. I look back on my life and I'm like, I have done nothing on my own strength, right? I mean, yes, I plow through and I make decisions and I do things. But in the end, the only reason why those things are even, you know, that I'm capable of doing any of them is because other people have helped me along the way. And other people have provided resources and advice and whatever it is. But those guys have helped me, you know, and I will never, ever, I'll be the first person to say that I'm not the person to take credit for anything, you know? So I even think about, you know, writing my book. Like, there were a ton of people that helped me make that possible. And so, yeah, I wrote it, but at the same time, there were a lot of people that were a part of that who helped, you know? So, all right, so we need help. We need to be able to say that. I need help, okay? And then the fourth one, the final one is, I'm sorry. And saying that you're sorry and apologizing for something, this reflects back on the I made a mistake, very similar to that, but actually verbally saying that I'm sorry, that I was in the wrong and I'm sorry. This is so hard because if you say that you're sorry, that means that somehow you were wrong and they were right. And people don't like that. It's in our human nature that it's like, we want to be right. We want to be seen as that we're good people and that we're doing good things. So if we have to apologize and we have to say that we're sorry, then somehow that means that something in us was deficient, that we screwed up. And it puts us in a very vulnerable position to say that you're sorry. I mean, especially if you hurt somebody really bad and you have to step up. I can't tell you. I mean, I feel like during my fundraising days, I feel like I apologized a lot because there are so many times where you think that you did something right. And then in the end, you really hurt somebody, you know, whether you intended it or not, like whether you said something that just was painful or that you said something and it was just wrong, you know, that maybe it came out of emotion or maybe it just came out of information, bad information that somebody else gave to you. You assume that things are going one way and then they weren't. You know, I recall, you know, plenty of times where I was, you know, meeting with a volunteer and I did not realize what was going on in their personal life, you know? And so I was push, you know, and here we're trying to get stuff done. And I just, you know, was starting to think like, maybe they're bailing on me. Maybe they're not showing up. But in actuality, they were going through something really terrible that they just didn't feel comfortable sharing, or they just didn't vocalize. And so I had to then step up and apologize for the fact that I just did not know. I mean, sometimes it's just, you don't have the information, so you don't know how to respond. And so the only thing you can do is say, I'm sorry, I didn't realize what you were going through. I didn't realize that this is what was going on. And so your apology can come from, you know, it doesn't have to be a place of vulnerability. It's really just bad information. You just didn't know. And like before when I was talking about, you know, the saying that I made a mistake, well, the same thing with saying that I'm sorry. Sometimes you have to apologize on behalf of somebody else on your team, and you have to be able to step up. But there are so many people that leave organizations, they pull their dollars because somebody would not admit that they screwed up. And I don't want that for you and your cause. I want you to be able to nip that thing immediately as soon as it happens and just say, I am so sorry, I screwed up. Or I am so sorry, somebody on our team just did not realize that that's what happened or didn't understand the process and that was our mistake. I'm sorry. You know, and so I think being able to just address it, think about how many people are, you know, estranged, you know, from friends or family members or parents or whatever, and it's all based on because nobody would apologize. Nobody would take credit for, you know, take the blame or whatever for something that went wrong. And sometimes you don't have to apologize for what they did, but you can own up to what you did. And once you can do that, it just opens up conversation and it opens that relationship back up again. And I hate that, especially when it comes to donors, that sometimes you misunderstood, you screwed up, whatever it was. And by just addressing it and flat out saying, hey, I am so sorry that that happened. I am so sorry that I didn't do it the right way, whatever. And you just can get in there, have that conversation, sit down with them face to face, find out what's going on in their world and address it so that you can move forward. And most of the time you can repair a relationship very quickly if you can just address it very, you know, when it happens. Don't let it drag out for weeks, months, years, and not like, you know, and then all of a sudden it's the big elephant in the room. And we don't want that, you know, we don't want that for our causes. And I don't want that for your relationships either. So these four things that I'm talking about here, I mean, not rocket science, right? You know, it's just the fact that we have to be able to step up, and especially the leadership that you are, you know, in the leadership position that you're serving in, we have to take the high road. You know, our egos start to come in the way. Maybe it's pride, maybe whatever is going on, but we have to be able to put that aside for our cause. We We have to be able to step up and say, you know what? It's important for me, especially as the leader, to be able to address this. Now, there, you can see it in media all over the place. When something bad happens, the leaders that do it right address it immediately. I mean, whether you agree with it or not, you know, what happened with Howard Schultz and Starbucks when, you know, they kicked the, you know, two guys out of the Starbucks because they were just sitting there using the bathroom. They didn't order anything. And all of a sudden, it was like a PR nightmare for Starbucks. Well, Howard Schultz jumped right in, addressed it, said, we're shutting down our stores. We're going to be having a conversation and we're going to nip this thing. And we apologize. We are sorry that this happened and it will not happen again. And so immediately addressed it and ready to move forward to say, what can we do and how can we do it better? And that's, I just think we can learn so much from situations like that when we watch on, you know, on TV. One of the PR things that has happened that I saw specifically, Susan G. Komen, you know, known for being the leaders in breast cancer research and all that, but, you know, coined basically the pink ribbon. And you know, they had a PR disaster and several years ago, and they didn't take a side. They basically bounced from one side to the next. And so in the end, nobody really even knew what they stood for, you know, and it was just a bad PR situation. And it was like they were apologizing, but then their actions were showing that they were really like, which side are you on? You know, which direction are you going? And so in the end, I think that they just confused people and they're still paying for it today, unfortunately, you know. And so, and I don't have a for or against, you know, for any of these causes. But the thing is that I'm like, when something happens, we have got to address it so that we don't lose donors, we don't lose volunteers for a cause just because of a misunderstanding or lack of our leadership to step up and apologize and to address that we made a mistake. And then also on the other side of it, letting somebody know that we just didn't know the answer and we're moving forward with the best information that we have and that we need their help in order to find the answers. In order for us to do this better, we need their help. We need other people to step up, join in, be a part of this great thing that we're doing. So all of these things, I think it's important. I think it's something that we, you know, are continuing to learn and get better at and grow. But if you're challenged by saying any one of these four things, I just encourage you to dig a little bit deeper, find out why it's so hard, you know, why it's so hard to address those things and be able to put that to the side and be able to say, okay, I'm serving in leadership. I'm serving in this role. How can I make sure that all of my donors and my volunteers really feel like they're a part of something great? And that as a leader, I'm strong enough to address when I screwed up and I'm strong enough to be able to address when we're doing things really killer. And when we're winning, you know, and I think that that's what we want to continue to do as we lead our great causes. All right. So, hey, if you've been enjoying the podcast, I just encourage you to share the show with a friend, with a nonprofit leader, encourage them to check out the show. I would love that. And also, if you don't mind, I would love a review. So take a few minutes, just click on the dot, dot, dot. If you're in your, you know, podcast app and just click on there, write a review. Let me know what you're thinking. What do you think about the show? And I would love to see that. The more reviews that we have, by the way, the more nonprofit leaders this podcast can get in the hands, you know, that it can get out to those people. So we definitely want to be able to help as many nonprofit leaders as possible. And let's, you know, make sure that our charities don't feel like they're, you know, missing out on information and knowledge that can make them a better cause and bring in more dollars for their organization. So, all right. Well, thank you so much. I hope you guys have a great week. Let's go change the world one volunteer and $1 at a time. Would you like to create a killer six or seven figure signature fundraiser where you have long-term sustainability, less stress, and the freedom to focus on what really matters? Well, Fundraising Freedom Academy may be just what you need. I'm Mary Valone, and I created an 18-month training program that gives you the clarity and confidence to launch, grow, and scale your signature fundraiser, including weekly coaching calls, masterclass trainings, and easy-to-edit templates to build your signature fundraiser. This was the exact plan I used to net $500,000 with a first-year event. Apply today for the next Fundraising Freedom Academy class at fundraisingfreedomacademy.com. That's fundraisingfreedomacademy.com.